Our next guest says aging is harder for women than it is for men. From the pressure to keep looking young to competition that comes from society and even from other women, she says that despite all that, there are ways women can start to feel more positive about getting older. Ashton Applewhite joins us now. She's the author of This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism. She's an activist against discrimination on the basis of ageism. Ashton, welcome to Central Time.
Hi.
Why do you say that aging is harder for women?
Because women face the double whammy of ageism and sexism. We are judged especially harshly on the basis of our appearance, as we all know. You know, how you look and how you look, of course, does matter. But it's in an ageist world, it's considered a problem or a failure to look old. And there's this double standard around aging, that aging, you know, makes those distinguished newscasters, silver-haired dudes, you know, be somehow enhanced by aging while women are devalued by it.
And you also talk about how as women age, in a way, they kind of get invisible. And one idea you had was that women should stop trying to sort of aid that process as you saw it at the time and not color their hair to let it go silver so that they stood out more.
How did that go over? I'm going to get hate mail if you frame it that way. As I say, I had a piece in the New York Times last week. When I was naive enough to think that I was being appropriate in speaking like that, I got a ton of blowback. I had this great, because it's not for me to tell any woman, any person, what she should or should not do. We age in our own way, at our own speed, and we each need to make whatever accommodations we need to make to get through life in a way that suits us. But I did have this sort of aha moment when I realized, of course, how many, many women dye their hair to cover the gray and don't like doing it. I'm only talking to those of us who experience this as costly and as sort of something demanded from us by society, not something we actually enjoy doing. And when we do that, we make ourselves invisible as older women. And when a group is invisible, so are the issues that affect us. And I just had this idea of, imagine if the world could see how many of us there are, women with gray hair, a.k.a. older women, how many we are and how gorgeous we are. And it would be, and if we could do it together, this year of letting our hair go gray. And I put it on Facebook. I got a ton of blowback for the reason I already referred to. But there's something in there, in the invisibility in which we collude.
Right. You know? And just to be clear, that's what I was getting at. This idea of being invisible is something I've heard from other women who age, and they say they feel like people stop seeing them. And I don't know if it has anything to do with hair color. And obviously women want to be free to dye their hair if they want to. People have to choose their own way. But what about the invisibility problem? How do we get at that?
Well, the invisibility problem is, again, really complicated, and it's hard to talk about it without appearing judgmental. So I really want to say, again, no judgment about dyeing your hair, about Botox, about fudging your resume, because those strategies are often really necessary to maintain your place in an ageist world. The problem is that they give a pass to the discrimination that makes the behaviors necessary. When a lot of our self-esteem is based on how we look, and in particular, to frame it in heteronormative terms, in whether we get men's attention, then if to age is to become ugly and men no longer look at us, we experience becoming invisible. So part of the issue, part of the challenge, is to look at ourselves differently and to stop valuing ourselves in terms of whether we conform to some punishing cultural standard, in which, of course, we all need to be thin, of course, and we all need to be beautiful, and we all need to be young. We cannot stay young. The way the system is set up now is that women compete against each other to see who can stay young or look younger. And you don't need a PhD in feminist studies to realize that doing that reinforces the idea that how you look is the most important thing about you, reinforces ageism because it promotes the idea that age, that older is worse than younger and old equals ugly. And it reinforces patriarchy, of course, because it's the standard, model where women compete. I mean, another example is stay-at-home moms competing against moms who work outside the home about who's a better parent, when we should be joining forces to close the wage gap. As long as women compete to stay young, it sets us up to fail, and it pits us against each other. And we are so much harsher judges of our own appearance than men are. I mean, I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of women who say, I wanted to go gray, but my mom said, no, don't do that. Or I went gray and my friends all said, gee, you know, you look older. Are you sure you want to do that? You should start dyeing it again. It's not typically men who say that.
We're talking to Ashton Applewhite right now. She's the author of This Chair Rocks. She writes at thischairrocks.com and is the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. And we're talking about what happens as women age. Ashton has some ideas about how women can claim their power and keep it going as they get older. And Ashton, one of the things you write about, you say, is we need to learn to look more generously at one another and at ourselves.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I quote, the article came out with a picture of Frances McDormand, whom I'm a big fan of, and she points to a wrinkle on her face and credits her son for that wrinkle for every time she went, oh, yippee, or oh, my God. You know, that looking, I mean, if you think about just the simple fact that we get wrinkles from laughing and smiling. So what does it say about a culture that urges us to eliminate, you know, the map of our experience? I understand that this is a really big ask, but I also know that it feels right and it feels natural, you know. And so one of the things I'm asking people, women, to do is to be, we know this from the body positivity movement, right? That as long as we're struggling to all be a size six, you know, and have everything perfect, we're never content with ourselves. And the real satisfaction lies in looking at yourself more generously, seeing that you are beautiful the way you are, and not spending tons of money and tons of effort trying to conform to some standard that maybe a few supermodels can make, but even they, they're going to get old, and then they're going to be depressed, and so on. It's a loser's game. It also has a tremendous class bias because that stuff is expensive, and again, it pits us against each other.
And part of what you're talking about there is getting a quorum of women, a community of women, to start thinking differently. Do you think that's happening?
You know, I'm not nuts. I know it's a really big ask, but I also know that it feels right. I know we know this from a lot of you know, work on ourselves from the body positivity movement. I think it's huge that Allure magazine in August, it's the issue that's, I think, still on the newsstands, bans the term anti-aging from its pages. Now, the next sentence in the editorial is like an ad for some, you know, youth-enhancing product. We've got a long way to go, but I really do think we know from the women's movement, you know, that being discriminated against on the basis of something about ourselves we can't change, and from the civil rights movement, and from the disability rights movement, you know, that there is no room in an equitable world for judging people on the basis of their skin color, their body size, whether they're in a wheelchair, and so on. To hitch age to that, you know, and to that wagon, if you will, and insist that age is a criterion for diversity as well, is I think the culture's ready for it, and I think it is absolutely happening. And, you know, women face this double whammy in all kinds of ways, in being burdened with more caregiving responsibilities, much of which is welcome, but some of which is not up to us. We just get stuck with it. And, of course, less wages, so women have less income when they get older and are less likely to have a pension at all. If they do, it's smaller. And with employers stop investing in women's careers in their 30s, early 30s, because you might have a baby. And whether or not you have a baby, whether or not you're ever going to have a baby, whether you're straight or gay, all women face this kind of structural discrimination, and we need to join forces against all of it. And with women of color, we need to make, you know, all these struggles are united, and we need to put them all in our sights, because you know, there's a great quote by a poet named Audre Lorde. She says, there's no such thing as a single-issue struggle because we don't lead single-issue lives. When we make the world a better place to grow old in, we make it a better place in which to be a woman, to be a person of color, to have a disability, and so on down the line.
Ashton Applewhite stays with us. She's the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. And you can join us. Why do you think getting older is tough on women? Do you ever feel invisible as you age? And how do you embrace the stage of life that you're in, the age that you are? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Ashton Applewhite is here with us now. She's the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. She's an activist against discrimination on the basis of age. And you can join us. What do you think about this? If you're a woman, do you find that as you get older, it's tougher to feel good about yourself? Do you feel pressure from society to stay young? And how do you deal with that? How do you cope and create a community that's supportive and values who you are at any age? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Ashton, let's get to another one of your suggestions. You suggest that we tap into what we know, that getting older enriches us.
It does. I mean, if you want evidence of that, how about the fact that no one, no matter how terrified they might be about getting old, actually wishes to be any younger? If, you know, unless you could take your present-day consciousness back with you in time, which, of course, we cannot. We know that, I am not a Pollyanna about aging. There are real challenges that are totally legitimate. But I want to make the case for telling both sides of the story, that while there are losses, there are all kinds of gains. We contain all the ages and people we have been along the way, and that knowledge and those experiences remain accessible to us. It is additive as well. So, and you know, for lots of women, I mean, even this loss of sort of visibility is how some women experience it. I find that really liberating. One thing that is universal to aging, just about, is more confidence. You're more comfortable in your own skin, figuratively and literally. And, you know, all of those, I mean, it's hugely liberating. And lots of older women find that if they are freer of the day-to-day demands of caregiving, find it, and society's expectations of them, find it a lot of fun, actually. I mean, I don't know if, you know, talk to your friends and tap into yourself. I think it's a pretty universal experience, despite living in an ageist culture. And imagine how much even more positive that would be if we didn't live in a culture that tries to drown out all the positive.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234 as we talk about how women can push back against anti-ageism in our culture. And let's go to Suzette in Greenfield. Suzette, hi.
Hi. The point that I want to make is that socially, I have no problem with aging, with friends or activities or anything, but it's in the workplace that I feel really, I really feel the pressure. I'm 57. And I just don't feel that there's any more opportunities for me to, like, climb, you know, the ladder at work anymore. And people, you know, the young ones say to me, so when are you going to retire? I'm not even thinking about that.
Suzette, thanks a lot for that, for sharing that. And Ashton, what comes to mind as you hear Suzanne sharing her experience right now?
That's a great call. Thank you, Suzanne. And the original title for this whole project was called So When Are You Going to Retire? Because it's something people get asked so often. That is a totally ageist thing to say, as you know, because that's how you hear it. And a really good all-purpose answer to something like that is just, why would you say that? And then let that uncomfortable pause hang in the air, because then, you know, and then see how the person answers. And if they You know, what is up? Because you're 57, I mean, they may or may not know how old you are. And congratulations for saying it out loud on the air without flinching, because we need to own it at the same time that we push back against exactly what you're bridling about, the idea that 57 means that you're on your way out. The longer we live, the more different from one another we become, and the less someone's age tells you about what someone is interested in or capable of. So I think what you want to do is just ask that open-ended question and see what they say and try and push back against any of the stereotypical assumptions they might be making about you on the basis of your age, and get them, see if you can jog them into realizing that, you know, would they make a similar comment on the basis of your skin color? You know, no, they wouldn't.
Susan, thanks a lot for that. Really appreciate your call. And we go next to Maddie joining us from Black River Falls. Maddie, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
And for myself, I'm always grateful and very thankful every morning. I say a thank you for another day of learning something, possibly being able to hand someone else information that I learned through the years. I'm approaching 80 in a few days, and my time that I can spend doing things for other people or volunteering and just enjoying every day that's there is wonderful. And when some people say, oh, you know, they're approaching a certain age, they're over the hill. Well, for myself, I think it's much better than being under the hill, as far as I know. And it just, life is beautiful, even if it's a rainy, cloudy day like it is here today. But there's so much to be thankful for, and I would love to have a lot more years ahead of me than what I have behind me. Mm-hmm. And everybody should be so thankful for whatever limitations they have, even if they're physical or mental. To be thankful gets you through an awful lot.
Maddie, thank you so much. Beautifully said. And Ashton, gratitude for each
gratitude
day.
And beautifully said. You know, we in this culture, we look at age through the lens of loss alone. And what we lose as we age is more visible than what we gain, although the gains are equally real, of course. And it's so easy to underestimate the quality of life of an older person or a person with a disability. What we hear from the caller and so many other people is that we adapt to changes in our lives, and it doesn't mean that a life that might be more constrained physically or even cognitively isn't absolutely worth living, and that the view from the inside is different. I mean, I had tons of ageist assumptions when I started this project, one of which was that older people must be depressed because it's awful to be old, as we know, and you're going to die soon, and so why wouldn't they be? Older people enjoy better mental health than the young or middle-aged. The longer people live, the less they fear dying, and people are happiest at the beginnings and the ends of their lives. Google U-curve of happiness if you don't believe me. And that is the case across cultures, around the world, across financial status and health status. And again, imagine what that curve would look like. It shows life like the smile on a happy face, you know, happiest in childhood and into our 80s. What would that curve look like if we didn't live in a culture that bombarded us with messages that it's sad to be old and that old people have little to contribute?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Do you think we have enough role models? When I think about older women that I see being celebrated in the media, usually what I hear commentators saying is, oh, she looks fabulous. Doesn't she look great? Instead of, you know, what is she contributing? What is she doing? What has she done?
Well, what's the most important thing? How we look, right? You know, that's totally not okay. I think there are millions of role models out there doing fantastic things. I would like less of the emphasis to be on how you look, let alone how you look for your age, which is an incredibly ageist thing to say. You would never say, you know, you look great for a woman. So again, analogies to other prejudices are useful in figuring out what's ageist and what isn't. There are lots of women out there. I also think it's really important to celebrate people, men and women alike, who are not necessarily curing cancer or jumping out of airplanes, but simply meeting each day with generosity and equanimity, like the woman who just called. She's a hero, too.
And again, thank you, Maddie, for that call. And Ashton, as we wrap up now, we've got about 30 seconds left. Leave us with one or two positive thoughts that we can start with, or actions we can take.
I just left you with a lot of them. I urge women of all ages to come together and talk about aging, because we're very age segregated in society, and we don't talk about this stuff. Younger women would be less fearful if they learned about, you know, what it's like to be older, and older women, I think, would be less resentful because we would make friends. It is really, really important as we age, men or women, to make and hold on to friends of all ages. And of course, when we do that, ageism dismantles itself, because it's really hard to hold on to stereotypes when you have friends of all ages or all colors or whatever, who clearly, obviously, don't conform to stereotypes because they don't exist.
Ashton, thank you for that. And in looking forward to what we can expect, you think things are getting better. You think that we're ready for this. You see signs that things are changing.
I think we know that diversity is here to stay, and that it's a good thing, and that to incorporate age as a criterion for diversity is a very small ask. I have it, you know, it's not always on the list, but when I say to people, you know, what do you think of criteria for diversity? How about age? Nobody says that's a dumb idea. They all go, duh, obviously. So I think we have a very short leap to add to this, you know, broader social consciousness and awareness that is already well underway.
Ashton, thanks a lot for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Ashton Applewhite is the author of This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism. She's an activist against discrimination on the basis of age. And we're talking about how women can feel empowered as they age and can push back against the anti-aging stigma that women face. And you can let us know what you think. How do you empower yourself? And how do you look at the world as you get older? Let us know over on the Central Time Facebook page.